This week on What's Up ABQ, things are gradually starting to open back up and get back to, well, let's call it semi-normal. So are you thinking about how to continue to express your creativity that you've been experiencing while stuck at home? Well, just remember, we live in a place that inspired many others whose names you might be familiar with.
George O'Keefe, Alfred Stieglitz, Ansel Adams was out here, Elliot Porter was out here, Edward Weston was out here.
New Mexico has found itself on the prints and in the viewfinders of so many famous artists. And who says you can't be the next one? Travel up I-25 to a workshop that will take your talents and give you the skills to take them up a notch. You never know. You could capture the next moonrise over Hernandez, New Mexico. Find out how with Lindsay and Ryan on this week's episode of What's Up ABQ in the City Different.
What's up, Albuquerque? This is Lindsay.
And this is Ryan.
And this is season two of What's Up ABQ.
And welcome back to another episode of What's Up ABQ. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Lindsay.
And today we have...
Stafford Squire.
And where are we at?
We're at the Santa Fe Workshops.
And now I know this is a little bit different than what we usually do, but you know what? We're expanding horizons, and I think it's a good thing.
This is the second time we've expanded our horizons to the City Different, and so I'm happy that we're here. It's actually an ideal day. It's very snowy up here. It's very Santa Fe. It's got the whole feeling, so I'm really happy that we get up here from time to time.
So what is Santa Fe Workshops?
How long you got?
At least 40 minutes.
So the Santa Fe Workshops is the what we consider the gold standard of workshops. And what we do here is we run photography and writing workshops. We generally run them during the summer months where we bring in the best photographers, the best writers in the world. And they're in workshops for students that come here and generally take classes between 5 days and 3 days.
How did you first find out about Santa Fe Workshops?
I've known about the workshops for over 15 years. Years ago, I ran a division of a company called Corbis, which was a big digital media company, a lot like Getty Images. And at that time, I was managing our photographers' transition from working with film to digital. And during that time, I got to know Reed, because I'd bring our photographers down to Santa Fe to take classes with a gentleman named Jerry Cavassier, who ran the digital lab at that time. And about a year and a half ago, Reed and I just started talking, and he said, "Hey, staff, I'm considering moving back to Maine because I have some family things I need to deal with." And one thing led to another, and he asked me if I'd come down and run the show down here, and I said yes, and I've been here a little over a year now.
So you mentioned Reed. Who is Reed, for those who don't know?
Reed is the founder and CEO of the company. He started this company 30 years ago, so Santa Fe Workshops has got deep roots here in Santa Fe. We've been doing it a long time, and it's a beloved institution, and I'm just honored to be a part of it.
So when somebody comes and they kind of look at your website and they go, "Okay, I think I want to take a class, I'm really interested in photography," what is something they can expect from you?
Well, they can expect to be working with the best photographers in the world. It really depends on what class they're interested in. We run workshops for everything from street photography to travel photography. We run workshops in Mexico, Cuba, Nepal, China, all over the globe. So it really depends on the workshop. You know, at the base level, they can expect to be working with the best creatives in the world and getting both a remarkable education experience, but also just a remarkable experience in general. You know, being here, working with the folks here at this beautiful campus, you know, half of what they get is just, I call it summer camp for grown-ups. Yeah, you know, they come down here, they have a great time, and they learn a little bit about photography.
At least a little bit.
A little bit.
So this campus is actually remarkable, and it's very unique. Can you explain a little bit about the campus to us, since people can't see it? It's incredible, and it's very unique. It's a very interesting space.
Yeah, we actually rent space. It's called the Mount Carmel Monastery, and I'm just learning the history of it. But the history of the place goes back. It's got deep roots, and it's got deep creative roots. There's a room across the street. It's called the Sunmount Room. And in that room, Samuel Clemens, Dora Welty, Ezra Pound, other folks like that would read their work to people that were housed here. It was a sanitarium for, I think, tuberculosis. Mm-hmm. So they would have people come here because of the weather, and they would be in the space, and some of these amazing creative writers would come and share their work. So, you know, we've been here for 30 years doing our photography and writing stuff, but this place has been here, you know, over 100 years and deeply integrated with the creative community.
So you mentioned some of the workshops that regularly go on here. This season, if there was a workshop that you personally wanted to take, and you can only pick one, which one would it be and why?
You know, I'd probably take, there's a gentleman in town named Norman Mouskoff, and I remember when I was in high school, my photography teacher said, hey, you should check out Norman's work. He did this beautiful work on sort of long-form journalism stories on the rodeos. And when I came to town, I got to know Norman. And so Norman's a buddy of mine. We go out and get coffee from time to time. And he's hands down one of the best photographers in the world. And not just because he's a friend, but because I can learn a lot from him in the terms of creating a body of images that's not just one image, but it's a number of images, when properly put together in sequences, tells a powerful story. So I'd hang out with Norman.
And I know that tech is really important for photographers. Mm-hmm. Do you have a specific preferred camera that you like to use?
You know, tech is important. I just wrote a blog about this.
Okay.
And the gist of it was that technology is just a tool. And it's a tool that helps creatives do different things. And what I was writing about is Ellen Chrome has just come up with a new lighting system. And I think it's similar to high speed sync. They call it high sync. And it allows you to freeze motion during daylight at like 40 feet. So with folks that are doing action photography, it's remarkable technology. But it in and of itself doesn't make you a better photographer. And the point I was making in the article that I was writing is that a lot of folks lean back on technology to make their imagery better. But when you see that picture, it just breeds mediocrity. And that's why you see so much crap on Instagram. It's technologically driven. It's gotten really easy to make, quote unquote, good technical pictures, but there's no artistry there. So what we're about is technology is a baseline. We have to use it. It's not a necessary evil. It's really cool. But we mix that with story and then creativity, and then you get good pictures.
I was going to say, what makes for a good picture?
You're really grilling today, huh?
Well, you know, dude, if I knew the answer to that, you know, I'd be a genius. You know, it really depends on the type of photography. You know, a good buddy of mine, Eddie Soloway, one of the best landscape photographers in the country, and it's hard to be a good landscape photographer because everybody's done it, and you do it over and over and over again. And Eddie's always trying to reinvent it. So, you know, last time I was out talking to Eddie, we were looking at, God, whose work were we looking at? We were looking at Georgie O'Keeffe books, and we were looking at the way she uses color and blurring things together and working abstractly. And then, you know, we went out to the hills up near Ghost Ranch, and we tried to shoot like Georgie O'Keeffe would paint, right? Freaking hard. Didn't work.
But we can't all be Georgie O'Keeffe. Turn it.
Well, you know, it wasn't, I don't know if Georgie O'Keeffe ever picked up a camera, but because she was married to Stieglitz. But the point was, you know, you're always trying to push those boundaries. So you're always trying to be in that comfort level and saying, what could I do differently? And not just randomly. You know, Eddie did a lot of research to come up with this idea, and we researched a lot and went out there and tried it, and it sucked. It totally didn't work. But it was a great day, right? Because we were trying new things, different things. And sometimes they stick. And when they stick, it's like, bah!
So what are some new things on the horizon for photography in general and maybe in New Mexico that you've noticed?
I think what's old is new again. And so the trends that I'm seeing that I'm really interested in is traditional processes are coming back. You know, we're talking about not this coming year, but the next year, opening up the wet lab again. And why I'm so fascinated by it is you see different trends in the history of art and technology. And I was talking to a friend the other day about, we were talking about how the internet has changed the way we market and how all these new tools have changed. And my point was, well, it hasn't changed that much. Because we have all these revolutions that change things. Remember this conversation?
Yeah, I do.
And we were talking about, you know, the Gutenberg Bible and the press and how that radically changed everything. But still, the story is what persists over time. So I'm really excited about opening up a wet lab again. And how I bring this back to the conversation about technology is the tools in art start as mass communication tools. You know, that was true with woodblock printing in Japan. That was true with, like, the Gutenberg press. That was true with lithography. That was true with intaglio. Because all those things were originally built to do mass communication. And now that other things have supplanted them in terms of mass communication, they become art forms. And the same thing is happening with black and white photography and color photography, is a lot of creative people are getting back and getting off of the computer and getting their hands wet with Fixer again and closing the door and turning on the safe light and saying, don't bother me.
Because I'm crazy. In high school. I thought it was lost, but it's back. It's great.
I think it's just because people like to close the door and drink a good bottle of wine and listen to music and say, don't bother me. And
Really, I mean.
We found the secret of what makes it.
New Mexico especially, and I'm going to ask this question because you just moved here, I don't want to say recently, but within the last year and a half or so, is deep with oral tradition and history, and we have a lot of rooted culture here. How does that translate into photography? How do you translate that, and how do you communicate that to people that are taking classes here? Or do
absolutely you do, because Santa Fe, northern New Mexico, is steeped in the tradition of photography. I mean, I just mentioned Georgia O'Keeffe. Georgia O'Keeffe was out here because she first started coming out here with Alfred Stieglitz. And when Stieglitz passed away, she came out and, you know, bought Ghost Ranch. But Ansel Adams was out here. Elliot Porter was out here. Edward Weston was out here. This place is synonymous with the history of photography. So, you know, you can't separate the two. You drive up to, was it Moonlight over Hernandez? I can't remember the name of the specific picture that Adams took, but that's right up near Ghost Ranch. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of our history. That's part of this school's DNA. It goes back to what they call it, the F-64 Club, which is Adams, Weston, and a bunch of those other guys. And the F-64 is the smallest aperture on your camera that allows you the greatest depth of field. So they had this whole group of people that all shot at F-64, and they were all tromping around these hills, you know, back up around these schools these guys were shooting. And so this place is steeped in the history of photography. And one of our challenges is how do you honor that history and then move the institution forward in a way that still is relevant? Because that is our DNA, but I don't want to go out and be Ansel Adams.
I think relevancy is a really good point. Like with art always changing, you know, like you said, what's old is new again. How do you remain relevant in what you're teaching, and then how do you perpetuate that into the future?
Yeah, when you figure that out, let me know.
Okay. All right, will do. Touche.
No, I think you have to stay relevant by obviously tracking trends in technology. You know, one of our struggles right now is, what do you do in a digital world? And, you know, I'm really, really pushing print, because I think photography belongs on walls, framed and beautifully lit.
You know, not on Instagram?
I think Instagram's fine. I mean, I tease Instagram quite a bit, but, you know, everything has a place. But the thing I hate about Instagram is the form factor. You know, you're looking at pictures, you know, maybe 1 inch by 1 inch, maybe 2 inch by 2 inch, and depends how rich you are and how big your device is, but almost never bigger than 1 foot by 1 foot. And many, many beautiful images need to be printed very, very large. Obviously, some pictures work great small, but when you restrict your palette to a couple inches by a couple inches, it really ruins a lot of great photography.
So we've talked a little bit about the photographer and photography. What about people who consume it? How have you seen people changed or impacted by good photography?
Well, you know, you're asking a lot of very profound, deep questions, right?
So the meaning of life is
42.
It is interesting because, you know, I came from the stock industry, and, you know, I started at Corbis, and at that time, you can make a lot of money selling pictures. And with the digital revolution, as we call it, photography became ubiquitous. And so there was a downward pressure on price. And when there's a downward pressure on price, there's also a downward pressure on quality. Not technical quality, because the cameras are so good, but the quality of what I would call the visual vocabulary. And the argument I make nowadays is, with the proliferation of Instagram and everybody being a shooter, you know, everyone's got a decent camera in their pocket, the nature of the language of photography has become dumb. Because it's all the same stuff. There's a great site called InstaRepeat, where a person goes through and they composite all together all those pictures that are the most common meme of that month. And a lot of folks, they bemoan it and they kind of say, this is a terrible thing. But I think there's a huge opportunity for great photographers to differentiate themselves now because everything is the same. Really great artists can still create work, and you can still make a lot of money with that work because brands need to differentiate from each other. So the challenge is that you have to be really good. Mm-hmm. And once again, as I said earlier, what's old is new, or what's new is old, is before the proliferation of the stock markets with Getty and Corbis, there were a few great photographers making a lot of money. Then there were a lot of bad photographers. Well, a lot of mediocre photographers make a lot of money. A lot of people making money that should not have been making money. And so I think of this as like a bubble in the stock market, and we're going through a correction where it's going to contract down. And if you have really, really talented and you've got really something relevant to say, you can still be a great artist. It's just fewer people can do it.
Well, I definitely hear that because as a writer, you see that with stories coming out. One of my big personal writer heroes is Neil Gaiman, and he said, make good art. Mm-hmm. And that may be a simple line to say, but that's a hard act to follow.
Yeah, it's like a Ratatouille, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like anyone can cook, right? Anyone can. Right. Only a few people can actually make something that's tasty.
Exactly. I'm not one of those people, to be fair. So do you remember what your first camera was, ever?
Yeah, I was fortunate in the sense that my dad was a great photographer, and he gave me a Rolleiflex, and he gave me a Leica. And that's what I learned to shoot on when I was in high school.
So for anybody who maybe is not even a mediocre photographer, maybe they don't know anything, or they're just starting out, or they're toying around with it and they're trying to learn, what are the basics? What are the essentials they need to know before they can get to that next level or take that next step?
In your own words.
What are the essentials? I don't know. It really depends on where you are. I mean, the great thing about photography nowadays is almost everybody has a camera. And so if you just want to get started, I mean, iPhones are expensive. But if you happen to have an iPhone, which a lot of people do, it's a wonderful way to experiment with photography. It's everything you need to have to get started, because most of photography is about composition, it's about color, it's about feeling, it's about the story you're trying to tell. So you don't need, a $4,000 camera to start telling a story, especially if you aren't going to be printing initially. You know, the file size you get off that iPhone is more than you need to work with digitally on a computer. And it's probably enough to go to, 11 by 17 if you want to print it. That's the best place to start. My dad had a great thing he told me when I was in high school, because I wanted to go to Brooks Institute of Photography right out of high school. And he said, Stafford, I won't pay for it. I'll pay for you to get a liberal arts education. Get out, get educated, get some life under your belt. Have something to say. Once you have something to say, then you can be a photographer.
That's really good.
But if you just jump in and start shooting, yeah, some people are going to be good because they're just going to be inherently talented and have something to say. But it starts here. It doesn't start clicking.
That's really good advice. I like that actually a lot.
We're about halfway through, so we will take a quick break and we'll be right back.
What's up, ABQ wants to thank our friends at Castle Coffee Company, 727 Tierras Northwest, who has hosted many of the podcast's recording sessions, building a culture of love and community one cup at a time, all done by hand, with coffee blends from Middle State Coffee, Old Barrel Tea Company, Cafe Lush, and pastries from Much Ado About Muffins and The Witching Flower. Castle Coffee Company, downtown at 727 Tierras. Servant-minded, coffee-inspired, community-focused. See the current offerings and order online at castlecoffeeco.com or dial 508-5271. That's 508-5271. Castle Coffee Company.
And we're back. And today, maybe you came in halfway through the show, maybe your finger slipped on the dial. We'll have you reintroduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Stafford Squire. I'm the president of the Santa Fe Workshops here in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
So we've talked a lot about photography, but photography classes, workshops aren't the only thing that here offers. There's another side of it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so about 4 years ago, we decided to expand the brand, because the school actually used to be Santa Fe Photographic Workshops. But we changed that about 4 years ago, before I was here, and started offering writing workshops also. Because what our school is about, it's about experiential creative education. And, we've been doing photography extremely well for, 29 years, 30 years. And we've been branching out and building a group of writers that come here basically to do the same thing. You know, workshops generally between 2 and 5 days. Yeah, so we're branching out into that world also.
So have you seen certain writing workshops that have been really popular?
Yeah, most of the writing workshops that are popular now are ones that are driven by the writer that comes here. So Natalie Goldberg comes and teaches here generally around twice a year, and her workshops are completely full. There's a gentleman in town named Hampton Sides who is an incredible writer, a lot of historical fiction. Not so much on the fiction side, but embellished history, you know, filling in the gaps to tell incredible stories about, you know, different events. He wrote a great thing about Kit Carson, wrote a great thing about Arctic explorers. So his workshops are filling quite a bit. We did a workshop last year with Molly Weisenberg on food blogging and food writing and things like that. So it's new to us, and it's growing.
How have you seen Santa Fe and New Mexico respond to Santa Fe workshops?
You know, that's a hard thing for me to answer because the place has been here so long. So, you know, the workshops are part of the fabric of this community. You know, I just started working here a year ago, and I love the place. I've known it, and I didn't realize how influential it is. Now that I'm here, I do understand the roots of the place. I'll go downtown and say, "Yeah, what do you do?" It's like I work at the workshops. I'm like, "Oh, that's so cool! You know, what a great thing!" And I'm like, "Yeah, it is a good thing. It's a great thing."
As a matter of fact, it is.
Realistically, no, it is. It is part of the culture of this town. It's got that deep roots, and the caliber of people that have been through here. It's the who's who of the photography community.
No, it's funny. I was down after work at Thirsty Eye Brewing in Albuquerque. Shout out Thirsty Eye. Hi. And the person behind the bar was like, "Oh, I know them." And then she started just going off about it. And I was just sitting there like, "This is great. Tell me more. Like, what does this mean? What kind of classes do you want to take?" You know, I hear it a lot here, but again, I come from the writing side. And so being able to find it in the wild was great.
Well, the other thing that I've noticed, you know, in Santa Fe in general, is I'm new to Santa Fe. So I'm known for putting my foot in my mouth from time to time. But, you know, Santa Fe's can be a little bit insular in its communities, and they're people that I can't believe don't know each other, you know, in the small town in the art community. And that's a little bit true with the workshops. And I would say that outside of Santa Fe workshops are probably known more than inside of Santa Fe, especially if you're in the photography world. Most people, if they're really into photography, they know of the workshops. And it's the kind of thing like, "Someday I'm going to go to Santa Fe and, you know, take a class with Eddie Soloway," or, you know, something like that. So it's an aspirational thing that, you know, most photographers at some point in their careers have thought about.
Well, you know, and it's so funny because we've seen this in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, New Mexico in general. So many people, they say, "Oh, you know, Mexico's so boring. I'm going to move away. There's nothing here." There's lots of things here.
You know, Santa Fe is its epicenter of the I would say, the creative community in a lot of areas in this country, for sure. And I don't have the piece with me, but one of the things I read to our students is called, it's an essay, I can't remember who wrote it. It's called The Thin Space. And there are certain places on the earth where magic happens. And Santa Fe is one of them. And it's not like magic, like, "Oh, this is a great place to come and party." It's a place where creative things happen. And it's not always fun. I mean, creativity is a bitch. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard. I mean, most people that are creative people, for the most part, they aren't the happiest people in the world, but they're the most fulfilled people. And I think they lead the best lives in many respects because their lives are really, really meaningful. But, you know, I've talked to you about, you know, trying to write, and you're just like, right?
You know? Yes. You're basically quoting me here.
Well, I get the text messages. "This is the worst. I can't think of anything. I'm stuck. I have a writer's block, and I can't think. Give me any topic." And I'm like, I don't know.
But then when you get it, it's the best.
Yeah.
You know, when you in photography, I would say a good hit rate is like 1 frame out of 1,000 is something that's really worth it. But it's 1 out of 1,000.
Yeah, well, that's like what Stephen King said in his book on writing. He said, "Your best PR is your next book."
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's painful, but it's true.
Yeah. And you're only as good as your last book.
Yeah, right. You know, it's so funny. Coming from the Pacific Northwest, I think we have that in common. And sometimes I have to leave New Mexico to come back and rediscover that it is a very magical place. Because I think when you're here for so long, you kind of maybe become, I don't want to say desensitized to it, but you get used to it.
Yeah, you get acclimatized.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And so there's times where I leave and then I come back and it's like my eyes are opened again. And yeah. It's like, oh my gosh, this is such a wonderful place. You know, I remember when we first moved here, Ryan, we went to Acoma, Sky City, Pueblo, and I just kept taking pictures because it was like I had never seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, coming from Portland, it's like you don't see that.
Well, you know, it is true. And I have the sort of the inverse going on now because this is still all new. I'm pigging shit down here. You know, I'm looking at the skies and I'm like, oh my God, that's the most beautiful sky. And all my friends that have lived here forever are like, dude, that's just the sky. And it's like, no, you don't get it. I came from Seattle, Washington, where
you see the sky. You see it but once a year.
There's gray up there.
But for me, you know, the inverse is a little true. So when I go back to Seattle now, I'm like, oh, this place is awesome, you know, in terms of the culture and the music and the beer and, you know, it's like, although Santa Fe's got some great stuff to add too. But yeah, I do get what you're saying, but I'm still a tourist down here. I'm just like, oh my God, this is an adobe building. It's so cool.
I'm gonna take some pic. No.
It's so brown. It's true though. I feel like there's this, I don't know how to say this because I'm going to end up saying the wrong thing, but no, I feel like it's a certain taste. Santa Fe and Albuquerque leave a certain taste in your mouth. And then once you get acclimated to what that tastes like and that feels like, and it becomes home to you, then there's this whole other level of appreciation that you never saw before. And then you come back after going somewhere like, you know, I went to Portland last summer and I love Portland. It's like, it's still where I grew up. It's still beautiful. It's still the Oregon coast. I love it. Big fir trees. But I felt like, okay, you know, I can appreciate it up here, but New Mexico is home now, and there's just this thing about, there's a draw.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to describe it other than that. It's just, there's a draw here.
I almost think of it as, it's not really part of the United States in some respects. I mean, the culture, and it's been, I was writing, God, I wish I could name the name of Hampton's book, but he talks all about the history of the Americans, the Spanish, the indigenous populations, and this cauldron of violence that has been going on down here for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And after reading that book and like taking the high road to Taos and going and looking at the Pueblo up there and understanding that, okay, this is where this battle happened, or this is where this atrocity happened, or this is where this amazing thing happened, the richness and the deepness of this place really starts to resonate. And it's really easy to go through and just think of this place as silver and turquoise and white-haired people, you know, walking around buying expensive trinkets and fancy stores downtown. But the roots are so much deeper than that. And that's what's been fascinating moving down here, is going through that first level of, oh, Santa Fe, it's so cool, to, oh my God, this place is profound, and not just in like aspirational ways, like in deep, disturbing ways sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big history buff, and I always remember the Pueblo Revolt happened here. Like the Pueblo Indians successfully took back their land, like beheaded the governor of Santa Fe. We're just
right down
the street.
There.
You know, and like a horse drug his body back to Albuquerque. Like real, like you go down and you sit in the plaza and you know, and you see all the tourists and you see, you know, everybody and it's so easy on one hand to forget that. Yeah. You know, but when you bring in that layer of depth of history, It's incredible.
My husband and I understand. My husband is from Santa Fe. He's a native Santa Fean, and it's interesting because his family lived just down here on Agua Fria, really close to the plaza. The road is still dirt. It used to be a family compound. I mean, there's grandmas and uncles and aunts all in this little tiny area. We lived there for a brief time, but when we were first married, and it's so interesting because literally his entire family for generations has lived and died in this very small space in Santa Fe. And I remember my first, like, I don't want to say, I mean, New Mexico, like, realization moment, I guess. When we were first married, we came to Zozobra. And I had never seen Zozobra, didn't know anything about it, had never heard of it. I was like, you burn a puppet? Like, I'm confused. Okay, I'll go. Sure. So we go, and it's like, yeah, we see Zozobra, and that's a cool little cultural thing to do in Santa Fe. kind of bizarre to other people if they don't know what it is. And then, you know, we go to fiestas the next day, and it's like, you know, and then you have all the family names hanging along the plaza, and then our last name's up there, and my husband's explaining like the history of his family, and it's been up there, and he used to go as a child and see that, and his grandparents are very proud of that. And, you know, we go to his great aunt's house, and she's making beans and chili in this tiny little adobe house that's like, the ceilings are like just slightly taller than I am, and it's amazing. It's just that moment where you're like, there is so much here, and I had no idea. You know, all I saw for a while was the turquoise and the tourists, and that's it. But it's incredible once you actually have that aha moment and you realize the depth and the blood that's been spilled here and the sweat and the tears that came along with building Santa Fe. It's incredible.
Kind of speaking of deep roots, we have a question we ask every episode.
You're
going to
do this.
Yeah, I'm game. Segue, look at that.
That was a terrible segue. All right.
Thanks. Thanks for the moral support. That means a lot. Okay. Red or green?
I'd have to say red, actually.
That's very Santa Fe of you. I'm impressed.
Do you have a favorite place in town to get good red chili?
I do not. I haven't done the whole sort of queried the whole town yet. Yeah, you know, people warned me about that question coming down here, and it's like I was warned to be very diplomatic about it initially, but there's no good answer to that question, because if you say Christmas, you're just a pussy, right?
Sellout. It's true.
We found a lot of people when they move here or they're new, they say green or Christmas, and then it slowly kind of ripens, if you will, to red.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like the more seasoned palate will say red most of the time. Most of the time. Although those Midwesterners, they just can't hack it at all. So.
Well, I know, but they drink Budweiser.
Not much of a palate anyway.
We can only help you so much.
I know. Well, it's so funny because we were having lunch at La Choza today, and we were talking to a girl who had just moved here from Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were talking about how New Mexico tends to be an IPA's state, which is strange to me, because I'd feel like, especially Santa Fe, I'm like, I want that, you know, that seasonal, like dark, you know, holiday ale, like with the spices and the cardamom, all that good stuff.
We may be from the Pacific Northwest.
Maybe. Possibly. I like a good dead guy myself, but that's just me.
We mean the beer.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah. We mean the beer. That's right. It's made by Rogue. You can look it up. But it's just so funny because I feel like my palate has even changed to where I'm like, I could go for a decent IPA. But again, people tell us they do the IPAs because it cuts through the heat of the chili, which I get.
But I mean, Seattle's an IPA town, Northwest. I mean, yeah, you can go to the dark side. The dark side. Right. But yeah.
So if people want to learn more about Santa Fe Workshops, how do they do it?
You know, the best way to do it is to come to our website, santafeworkshops.com, and you can see all of the classes that we're offering this winter-spring season, which we're just rolling into, and we just posted the classes for the summer season on Friday. And you'll be able to see the classes in Mexico and Cuba and Nepal and Japan, and I can't even list all the other ones we're doing. But yeah, come to our website, and you know, if you're in town, come up for a visit. You know, we're always like to have people, and we like to show people the campus, and yeah, come check us out.
My other question, just to kind of wrap it up too, was, do you offer internships or scholarships for anybody who maybe wants to take a class and they may not have the means, or they want to come and just learn?
Yeah, so the answer to that is yes. We have scholarships, which we're, if you're interested in, come to our website. The application period is still open. So you can get scholarships to, some of the scholarships are full scholarships, and some of them just so defer the cost because our classes are expensive. One of the things I'm very interested in doing is building up that program, because there's a lot of voices in the dialogue of photography and writing that aren't represented. And the only way that I can combat that is by increasing the scholarship program so we can get both younger and just people that can't afford it to come here. So we do scholarships. The other thing on the intern side is during season, what we have is we call seasonal staff that come in and help in the studio and, you know, our assistants. And those folks are basically, they're like paid internships because we don't pay a ton of money. But what you do is you come and once again, it's almost like summer. And it's really fun to work here. I mean, it is like, it's like summer camp, but you're over 21. Let's just put it that way.
It's grown-up summer camp. For fun
yeah,
stuff.
And you get to work with the best photographers and writers, you know, in my mind, on the planet. So it's a great way of getting that experience.
Ian Beckley, I'm calling you out. You need to get up here. Okay, that's a side note. talented photographer we interviewed a few episodes back, and
oh, I listened to that.
He would be a good asset. So there you go.
Kind of a wrap-up question. Where do you want to see Santa Fe Workshops go in 5-10 years?
You're supposed to be helping me write that plan.
Yeah, where do you want to see it go, right? Maybe the question's for you.
No, let's put it this way. I want it to maintain its relevancy, and I want to honor the history of this place because it's incredible. I want us to diversify the type of workshops that we offer. A lot of folks just think that we go out and take pictures of, you know, adobe buildings and landscapes and crusty looking old dudes on horses, right? We do a lot more than that. So I want us to maintain that relevancy in genres that are not necessarily specifically associated with Santa Fe. I want to build out programming that appeals to young people, but also programming that they can afford. Mm-hmm. And I also want to significantly increase our imprint in the travel workshop experience, because there's nothing like going on the road with a camera with someone that really knows what they're doing. I have this idea that experience is amplified when you overlay it with education. You know, you can go on an REI trip and someone can haul your butt up Machu Picchu or something like that. But when you have to go tell a story about it, either writing or photographically, that experience is harder, but it's exponentially more meaningful. Mm-hmm. So we're getting a lot of good feedback on those programs.
And if you could take one picture with guaranteed it would turn out perfect anywhere in the world, where would it be? What would it be?
That's a tough question.
We should have sent that one ahead of time.
One picture anywhere in the world.
Yeah, and it would turn out ideal.
You know, I can't answer that because, I was talking to Keith Carter, one of our great photographers. I think he teaches down in Texas. And, you know, his intellectual underpinnings is philosophy. And he says, you know, narrative informs the picture. So a picture isn't a picture of an object. It's the manifestation of an idea. And it just depends on what idea you're trying to convey at the time. And, you know, some ideas are topical, more relevant, or won't get political. But there are certain imagery that I think could be really, really powerful right now.
Amen to that. I like that answer. I think that's a perfectly great answer.
Is there anything else you want to share?
Nope.
Good. All right. Well, thank you so much for having us. Thank you for letting us into your space and having a conversation.
Hey, Albuquerque, it's Ryan. Did you know that you can leave us a 60-second voice message right on your own Anchor app for us? It's true. We are gearing up for our first ever listeners episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a message and tell us about some of the ironies that you've noticed about living with coronavirus, or how plague has impacted your work or business, or what weird or artistic things you've been up to lately as you've been stuck at home. In the meantime, you can also post your answers and pictures on social media with the hashtag #BurkeSpeaks. Take care, stay safe, and remember, we're all in this together.
By now, the isolation has got you going. And the thought of even attempting the grocery store is like... And your kids are like...
I'm so hungry.
Fear not, Albuquerque. Just call Rhubarb and Elliot Doorstep Delivery. How about kids' favorite meals ready to go and pop in the microwave, like chicken tenders, cheese quesadillas, or mac and cheese? Mom and Dad, we haven't forgotten about you either. With all-star dinners for the whole family and dinners for two ready to heat and eat, plus house-made soups, quiches, salads, and sandwiches, bagels, schmears, hummus, and even baked goodies. Not only will it satisfy your hunger, but all meals purchased help sustain the Albuquerque JCC's At-Risk Kids Meal Program. Free delivery to your doorstep with an order of $25 or more. Text them at 246-9608. That's 246-9608. Rhubarb and Elliot Doorstep Delivery. On the web at rhubarb-and-elliot-delivered.square.site. Here for you. Hey, what's up, ABQ listeners? Now is more important than ever that we support our local businesses here in the Duke City. Take a listen to some previous podcast episodes to hear more about the local restaurants, breweries, lodging, and museums that really need your help and support right now. Please consider ordering curbside pickup, buy some merchandise or gift certificates, or give a donation to the podcast's friends and community members during this time. And please, Albuquerque, stay home if you can. Do it not only to protect yourself, your family, and friends, but also to protect those first responders who were on the front lines in helping others fight this virus. We can't stress this enough. Please stay home. And contact Ryan and Lindsay if you have an idea for a show. Once they get to go back outside, of course. Just send a message to abqwhatsup@gmail.com. Take care of yourselves and each other, Albuquerque. And please join us for next week's episode of What's Up, ABQ.